Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Welcome, dear listener, to Fear from the Heartland. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley. Set aside some moments now and take an adventurous ride on a journey into the psyche of some talented writers. They will dig into your being and titillate you. Oh, I love that word, titillate. While the stories may not all take place in the Heartland, I am delivering them to you from the Heartland. My intention is to strike fear and confusion into the mind, soul, and yes, the heart. This is Fear from the Heartland. Hello, Heartlanders, and welcome to Season 4, Episode 8 of Fear from the Heartland. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley. Hey, Heartlanders, you guys patrons yet? Visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to join the club. You'll get ad-free versions of this and all our other podcasts, including hundreds of standalone releases from our audio archives dating back to 2012. It's a great way to show your support, and you get a whole lot for it. So I watched on the news the other night. A dog was humping the base of the Statue of Liberty. Now, is it safe for me to assume he got off on the right foot? Do you know why James Bond doesn't fart in bed? It'll blow his cover. If a child refuses to go to bed, are they guilty of resisting arrest? Statues and a bed. Eli Pope and two creepy tales. Let's get after it. We all have pains hidden deep within from traumas of our past, feelings of being forsaken, and a myriad of other pangs that this life unfairly doles out to us while others seem to live on carefree and full of rainbows and unicorns. Which side of the road do you stand? Do you have things buried so deep inside yourself that you almost forget they're there lying in wait to be recalled? Two different people come from two different circumstances and have taken opposing ways of acting upon their private hells. But a chance meeting of beauty and hell causes a terrifying intersection between them that cannot come to positive end for both. Tonight, you're going to meet those two until that brutal end. And now for your indulgence, Garden of Statues by Eli Pope. One. She stared at the detail of the concrete work. Reaching out, her fingers lightly touched the surface and found it to be very smooth. Every imperfection of the model's body was detailed as if the sculptor knew her intimately, from the dimple in her chin to what must have been a scar on her neck. It was there, her stance open and inviting, yet she also bore a wisp of uneasiness. The statue's facial expression was hard to explain. It invoked emotions like none Brinley was used to feeling. As her eyes worked their way up to the non-porous glazed texture of the statue's eyes, her skin quickly bristled sharply. Small goosebumps instantly poked from the surface of her neck and arms like tiny prairie dogs popping their heads above the ground's earthen surface. She stepped closer to explore, but as she moved forward, Brinley scanned her vision over the rest of the garden's large area. There must be at least 40 to 50 of these beautiful creations, she thought to herself. It was in that instant, she wasn't sure how this realization made her feel. too. Brinley always loved to read about places far away in areas most people didn't usually travel. Places which took specific planning and acts of specific effort to find them, and then of course go through the plans of traveling to them. Views such as this one were worth the work of bringing their experience to fruition. Anyone can drive to the Grand Canyon, and while it's breathtaking every time one peers out across its magnitude, there are so many unspoken sights to see that take hiking, climbing, and actually bonding with the world's many challenges to earn the gift of seeing and experiencing them. Brinley was appreciative of all the adventures she had accomplished so far in her young life. After all, she had imagined them and then managed to succeed in successfully completing all of them on her own. Details of each trip were neatly cataloged in a small 6-inch by 9-inch tan-bound journal. She kept it with her always. She saw it as her most valuable possession. It was her complete catalog of her young adult life. It was almost like the paycheck for her deeds done. Visual proof she had earned for each entry scribed onto its pages of the efforts put forth. The journal was her bank account of memories, saving them to enjoy when age or health forced retiring from such activities. But that was far from now. Almost unimaginable. Brinley Magnolia Willem is a gorgeous young woman. Her name is as beautiful as her smile. She being constantly told and reminded by almost everyone she announced it to when asked. What Brinley wanted to answer when people offered up such a beautiful compliment was that her life started out the farthest thing from the beauty of her given name. She wanted to say she never understood why her mother, who walked away and left her, would spend the effort of naming her such a lovely name. Brinley always held wonder of how any mother could just stop loving their child one day, and the fact that is what her mother had done to her led Brinley to never speak out about her. She didn't complain a single iota, but instead kept every hurt feeling tightly locked up deep inside, the key kept hidden from everyone. She told herself she didn't need a mother who could do such a thing, but inside she kept a secret place she never invited anyone into. She held this special place in her heart that would always love her, or at least miss her. She tried not to visit the internal place often, but it called out loudly when she was alone and feeling helpless. She kept that last mental memory of her mother's image frozen in the moment, just before she turned and walked down Grandma's sidewalk for the last time. Brinley was fortunate to have been left with her grandparents. They attempted to teach her what love truly was, what caring deeply for another meant, and how to do such. She learned quickly by observing others that visited the house, the way they held each other and gave goodbye kisses. She learned the how-tos, but she never really knew the true feelings one was supposed to experience. After all, she never received a goodbye kiss from her mother the day she left, so she merely mimicked the act, never completely realizing what the closeness of two entangled together really meant. She was raised knowing one should always try and help others, and she told herself it was correct, and she attempted to live her life in their umbrella of practicing such things. She supposed the question of why people did these silly things was what gave her the desire to adventure off to places less traveled. She felt more at home viewing others from a distance. Human touch felt uncomfortable. Visual stimulation was what held beauty beyond amazement to her. Destinations like this place, the Garden of Souls, a treasure hidden in plain sight if one did only minimal research, could find. The garden was nestled in the woods in part of the Appalachian Mountains that rose above the Tobique River in New Brunswick, Canada. Getting here hadn't been the most difficult trek she had ever made, but as she scanned the grayish concrete creations which were spread around, this was the place that felt most comforting to her. There were likenesses of people coyly peeking from behind trees, while others lay spread out as if basking on the rocks near the river. It was possibly the most unique and breathtaking place of all Brinley had traveled. They didn't speak or attempt to touch, no pulling you inside their arms and showering you with kisses and hugs you didn't ask for or felt comfortable with. It was all visual. She looked upward and back to the sculpture's feminine face. Her smooth nose, soft chin, and full lips captured in a moment Brinley couldn't quite decipher. Was the expression like hers? or was it like all the others? And then her gaze moved again to the statue's eyes. They glistened. How was that possible? Cement or mortar shouldn't be able to cast such a glimmer. Brinley stepped closer and reached up, brushing her soft finger over the surface. She sharply flinched and jumped backwards. She swore she had seen a flicker of the pupil's movement the second the tip of her finger brushed over the statue's soft, slick eye. She backed up against a nearby tree trunk in momentary shock. Her breathing quickened while she weighed what she surely just imagined. Wanting to look back at the concrete woman frozen in time but unable to bring herself to lift her head, her mind battling with reason, what possibly just happened? It was surely just a shadow on the stone from a bird in flight or some other simple explanation, she told herself. Possibly a butterfly or insect of some sort? She slowly broke her will to keep her head tucked down in the false safety of her collar as she slowly raised her head, allowing her eyes to explore the statue once again. The air she breathed in was hard, her lungs forcing a deep inhale as her heart pounded from a fear that was likely silly. That's what she told herself as she forced her muscles to unclench. She concentrated on reacclimating her senses to her surroundings, listening closely for anything that didn't match the normal sounds of the forest. She heard the river water against the rocks at first, then the faint buzzing of insects and small critters scampering across the ground's fallen leaves. All sounds one would expect to hear in a place like this. Birds chirping and, of course, the quiet breath of a breeze whistling through the trees. There wasn't a sound of any humankind, except for the rushing of air being forced in and out of her own lungs. She was alone. She felt assured she was quite alone. A tension began to release from her tightened muscles as she assured herself she had just been spooked for some unknown reason. She nervously smiled. 3. The eyes flickered left to right, repeating quickly. It was all part of the process, the very practiced process. Frederick Holt Taylor was a recluse. He always was, even as a child, quiet and reserved, never playing with other children at recess. He excelled at creating art, painting, drawing, and later forming sculptures in clay. He had an eye for artistic beauty. As Frederick grew older, he grew quieter in his ways, withdrawing even deeper into himself. His parents were wealthy and spent fortunes with therapists, doctors, and anyone with any psychiatric background. The money spent never changed anything but brewing resentment with Frederick, making him feel broken and without value. He turned to his only love, expressing himself in mixed colors on canvas with twisted human forms in both paints and clay figures. He was really quite genius, and collectors soon flocked to make purchases once word had gotten out of his brilliance. His father never understood and soon refused to allow such nonsense in his home. Frederick left his parents' home as soon as he turned 18. His mother busily squirreled money away for just such a day. She knew Frederick would need help and that his father would refuse giving any. She loved her son, but couldn't force herself to stand up to her husband after the last time she tried. "But Albert, he's a good boy. He just needs your love." "The goddamn boy is broken, Marguerite. He's a macabre little man who couldn't possibly have come from my blood. Who did you lie with all those years ago?" Albert had raised his hand and brought it down hard across her face when she denied any kind of an affair. "The day that bastard turns 18, he's banished from our family. I won't put a helpless child out on the street to suffer, but I'll by God be shed of the tarnish he's caused this family when he is a man." Marguerite had sat on the stone floor petrified of her husband's angered demeanor, her nose and lips bleeding, the white blouse she wore stained bright red. Frederick had remained hidden, but watched from the shadows of the upstairs balcony. He had heard every word, and even though he was only 9, he had understood exactly what he had just witnessed, and he never forgot how his father's violent aggression towards his mother ceased once she was sat frozen in fear, motionless like a statue. 4. Brinley pushed herself away from the tree, standing straight with a shakiness in her legs, but satisfied her heightened apprehensions of the odd surroundings were what spooked her. She looked around at the scattered whitish-gray forms. Their placements seemed to hold no visible pattern to them but placed where they fit into scenery itself. After standing quietly surveying the lay of the garden, she slowly stepped back towards the female statue that temporarily gave her the uncontrolled panic. Sounds of crunching leaves under Brinley's feet overtook any cries of birds or wind blowing through the forest. She stepped back to the statue formed in the reclined position. Her fingers reached back up to touch its eyes once more to feel the slickness that didn't match the coarseness of the plaster. They felt like glass. As she pulled her finger back, her hand quickly drew to her mouth in an immediate gasp. The eyes did move, and she immediately stepped backwards, almost tripping. "How can this be?" she screamed. Her heart raced again as her eyes darted around, her body moving in a panicked circle. Air rushed into her lungs as she sucked with frightened intention of catching a deep breath. She had no idea of what to do. She knew she was all alone, and for the first time in her life, it scared her. And then it hit her. The realization of it being possible, there was a living person encased inside the statue. "Oh my God, it can't be," she gasped. She again forced herself closer to study the figure. That's when she noticed the darkened crease between the hardened face's lips. There appeared to be very small holes in the mortar between the lips. There was a woman inside, she thought with a heightened fear beginning to overtake her, robbing her of any ability to make a sound utter from her mouth. She never saw the arm reaching around, holding the chloroform-drenched cloth tightly covering her nose and mouth. She struggled briefly to gain freedom, but quickly succumbed to a thick black darkness which overtook her.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
5. The sculptor carefully attached Brinley's limbs and torso to the form steel rods with thin wire carefully positioned in the form the artist wanted his final statue displayed in. He surveyed his captured prey, touching her soft skin as he twisted the wire to the structure. This one would be seated in a chair and looking into a mirror also wire tied to the steel where Brinley's hand was formed in a grip that held it. When he was happy with how the model's stance worked with the template, he left her still unconscious as he began adding water to his mix of mortar. "I'll make you so Father won't hurt you again. We mustn't anger him. If you're broken, he won't love you anymore." He continued mixing his special recipe of his sculpting compound, the mixture he had honed to perfection after all of his other creations. "I love you too much to watch him hurt you, Mother. Just stay still. It'll soon be okay." It appeared that Brinley's untimely travels to the Garden of Statues could ultimately lead her to a final resting place. No one knew she had traveled there. She had lived the life of a loner because of being deserted. Her grandparents were long passed away. She was on her own in this world, the perfect victim to become another muse of Frederick's. Just one more woman sculpted into a monument of remembrance to him. One more human being sacrificed to keep his mother from his father's cruelty. Frederick busily began applying the paste on Brinley's still unconscious body, beginning with her feet and meticulously working his way up after being satisfied with his work. He was almost up to where her torso met her legs when she began to slowly wake and start trying to move. "Easy, Mother. You mustn't try and adjust too much. Father may see you and come cause more harm."
What?
Her eyes appeared hazy and confused. Where am I? I can't seem to move my legs, my arms.
Frederick momentarily ceased applying the mixture. He stood up and wiped his messy hands on his smock.
Really, Mother, you mustn't wiggle around. He'll hurt you again. Don't make me use the chloroform again. You know how it gives you a headache, Mother.
But Brindley was like all the others. She just wouldn't listen. After several more attempts and seeing the compound on her calves beginning to crack, he left the room to retrieve his calming cloth. It didn't take but a few seconds until Mother slipped back into a state of quiet slumber, giving him time to complete his process. Placing the statue was another part of Frederick's process. It used to bother him as he'd hear the wisps of sucking air through the tiny holes around the lips. He knew it usually only took a day or two once placed before she would stop resisting and become quiet and comfortable in her permanent spot. The one he had spotted this new one at had taken the longest to become happy, almost 3 days later than most, but she hadn't stirred at all since he had begun working with this one. It seemed about every time he'd get one quiet and permanently relaxed, another would stumble by, and he'd have to help her calm down also. Sculpting was a very tiring form of his expression of art and love for his mother. After final placement in the garden, a perfect spot by the climbing mosaic and citra hops, he knew she would enjoy being surrounded by the green flowering vines. He stood back to admire his work. She looked beautiful, holding her mirror up in admiration of her reflection. He leaned in close enough he could hear her tiny breaths being pulled in through the ports. Her loving eyes were wide open in the window of the concrete form. "It's okay, Mother. You look beautiful. See the lovely hops climbing the trellises all around you? This will be a safe place away from Father, and I'll visit you regularly like all the other favorite spots around our home. I'm certain we will have visitors, too. We always seem to have them regularly, don't we?"
6.
Brinley's eyes filled with tears of fright. She couldn't speak or move even a finger. The feeling was overwhelming, but there was no way to confront it. Her mind raced. The minutes felt like days, but as the hours passed, the tensions of fear began to morph into thoughts of her past. She felt deserted a second time, just like when her mama dropped her off and disappeared. It was so much different this time, though. She was all alone, yet very kept. No one to comfort her or let her know it wouldn't last long. She let herself enter that special place she rarely ever went, that place where she hid her love for the mother who left her all those years ago. Brinley had to force her mental thoughts away from where she now was in order to draw from those distant memories of the woman who gave her such a beautiful name. She wondered to herself, when this part of her journey was all over, would she meet her mother again? Was there another place she would go to witness the unknown, or would life just fade into nothingness? What had she done to deserve this finality? Was it because she had locked her mother's memory away as if she never existed? Was this the punishment? Truly being alone, without choice, instead of choosing to be alone? Her heart began to suddenly palpitate wildly as her mind became flooded with all the questions and possibilities in her final outcome. She tried to speak, to cry out the word "Mama," but it only came out a muffled hum that echoed inside her head. She was feeling as if she should give up. She swore she heard someone calling out her name, but how could she? She could hear nothing but her own speeded heartbeat. Ka-thump, ka-thump, ka-thump. Brinley's eyes began to close. Her heart slowed. The wisps of air being drawn in and pushed out through the tiny holes became less and less forced. She was defeated. All hope vanished quickly like the warm snow from the sun's heated rays as the front passed by. She wasn't sure what brought her to open her eyes once more, but in the corner of the reflection from the mirror her hand held with no help from her own muscles, she saw a flicker. Her eyes widened, searching for what could possibly be happening, and then she felt it. A loud thump, and then an unknown amount of time passed until she began to feel a rhythmic tremble throughout. Her skin felt heated, but there was a slight coolness that felt as if it were breaking through. Her eyelids attempting to force closing, but her will maintaining to keep them open. Outside the concrete shell lie Frederick in a pool of blood underneath his head but spreading outward rather quickly. Two men in uniforms were lightly tapping and prying pieces of broken mortar from a seated statue. They worked tirelessly with careful precision and speed as if they knew it were a matter of life and death. Literally death at their feet, with Frederick's cadaver growing colder and stiffening in rigor mortis. But hopefully a life being saved in time to escape from the man-made cocoon created by a sick and twisted psychopath. The two Canadian Mounties continued with extreme perseverance to free the beautiful butterfly before being robbed of her ability to live the life she now fought to keep. The clear windows showing her widened eyes filled with fright gave them the will to continue. As one carefully lifted a broken chip of the compound away from Brindley's lips, a sudden gasp of air could be heard just before the word "Mama" cried out from her lips. She was alive. The tale, Under the Bed, is written by award-winning author Eli Pope and takes on the age-old assumption of who the monsters really are that live under the bed. This is more of a mental mindfuck. Pardon my language. But sometimes, the monsters under our beds can actually haunt in so many other ways than we have been brought up to think. Sometimes our fears become real and completely change our ways of thinking, along with the ways our lives end up. And now, with your indulgence, Under the Bed. One. My mom told me about Dad's quirky habit of sleeping under the bed when he was young. My dad was a tough cookie, so hearing such a thing about him made it hard to believe. I guess his father had been in the Navy. Mom said sometimes his father came home and tried to use him as a punching bag. I guess that saying of the nut not falling too far from the tree is sometimes a fact. My dad seemed to grow right into the mold his dad made for him. He liked to drink vodka like Grandpa, and when he did, he'd sometimes get nasty with his attitude. Short-fused and vocal. Sometimes physical. Mom said he wasn't that way before he went to Vietnam. She said that hellhole ruined a lot of good husbands, if they were lucky enough to even make it back home. Anyway, I guess my dad's safety zone from his father when he was a kid was under the bed. Most kids, like me, were scared as hell of what kind of monsters lived under our beds once the lights went out. My dad took refuge there. I felt a weird kind of smile stretch through my lips with the thought. Life can have a way of turning one's feelings about a parent from outright wonder and fear to a downright sorrow-filled compassion. I thought I'd never forgive my dad for some of the whoopings I got from him, but now that he's old and fragile, I see things differently. He looks at me now, and I'm not really sure he's even still in there. His eyes seem to tell me there is a faint memory of who I am, or was. I remember on occasional nights, my mom would come in and warn my brother and I not to argue with Dad. She'd have that look of concern in her eye as she quietly walked over to the bunk beds we slept. Mine was the top, because Johnny was older. He wasn't as scared of the dark side underneath as I was. Anyway, Mom would stand beside the bed and whisper to us, "If your father comes in, keep your eyes closed and pretend you're already asleep. He's spoiling for trouble tonight. Don't give it to him." "You gonna be all right, Mom?" Johnny asked in a hushed whisper. "'Cause I'll stay up and protect you." "I'll be okay, Johnny. Just go to sleep
and ignore anything you hear. I'll wake you up in the morning. It'll all be okay, I promise. Johnny and I went to bed many nights to those words of concerned warning from our mom. Too many nights we heard arguments and sounds of struggle downstairs in the living room and kitchen beneath us, underneath our beds. My brother would try and make me feel better when he'd hear my sniffles from under my blankets. Sniffles brought on by tears that were caused by our dad's demons left over from the war, mixing with his glass of clear liquid he called not water. One time I asked how come he changed so much when he was drinking water. "You don't do that to me and Johnny," I'd asked. My dad looked up at me with a blank stare that scared the hell out of us. I think back now, and what I saw behind his eyes were the leftover fears from the North Viet Cong. I see movies now, and I wonder how in the hell he lived through that. But after his eyes followed down his arm to the glass he was holding, he looked back at me and said only three words. "It's not water." And from that day on, that's what Johnny and I called the poison he poured down his throat for what seemed as fast as he could. The nights when he didn't drink, not water, became fewer and fewer. Fun Saturdays at the zoo or lazy Sundays in the park throwing a ball faded into nothingness. There were plenty of nights that didn't turn bad. I don't want to paint the picture that my dad was some broken evil devil looking to hurt us. What I saw then was different, but today what I think I looked at was a scared boy who was made to be a man too quick. I really don't think he held a mean bone in his body when he wasn't fighting his past with the bottle. I love my dad. I feared him at times. Mostly, he was just with his punishments. Mostly. I believe Johnny would have said the same thing if he were still alive. Unfortunately, my brother did not live long enough in this world, and I miss talking to him. I didn't do nearly enough with him when he was here. Johnny died just before the Christmas I turned 23. He was only 27. I hated Christmas for many years after the melanoma cancer stole him away from me and my family. I believe that helped feed my dad's demons too. I know it fed mine. Sometimes in this life, even at my age now, I still want to jump up high in the air to the mattress when I go to bed. It just feels like it's safer to give those damned goblins under the bed a harder target to grab. You know, if they are under there. I swear I still see two eyes in the dark, barely shining through the black, observing my every move. My dad is 87 years old now. He never seemed to have goblins under his bed. All his scary nasties were out here in the world of daylight, the time when everyone else feels safer. His mind is falling into the grips of dementia. He appears frailer each time I make it to see him. The man couldn't hurt a soul now, even if it were the Viet Cong war demons coming over the wire. He remembers me, though. I wish I could be more regular seeing him. Somehow the guilt eats at me for not being a better son. I, of course, tried justifying myself with thoughts like, where the hell was he when I needed help? It still hurts to watch someone grow old, especially someone you're supposed to love, but never felt like you ever knew them but surface deep. I hear now that I was his favorite between Johnny and me. Damn my mom for telling me such a thing after Johnny's gone. How could I ever live up to something like that? I'll be damned if I didn't try, though, more than once, even though he deserted me way back when I was 5. That's a story for another day. My parents divorced for reasons I later understood, but tried to explain it to a 5-year-old. He may have scared the shit out of me as a child, but he was still my dad. And then one day, he was not. He pretended to play the part for the 3 or 4 weekends he would visit and 2 weeks in the summer when Johnny and I would stay in Kansas City with him. He tried not to drink the not water then. I think Mama must have warned him not to fuck up. So I guess he loved us enough not to drink when we were with him after he moved out. 2. I didn't really want this story to turn the way of a me story, Doc. Well, Steve, how does this make you feel? Dr. Charles Strangeheart asked. You're kidding me, right? Do you educated fuckers really believe asking a lame-ass question like,
How does this make me feel?
Do a goddamn thing to someone with serious or even mild issues feel any better? Or is this just an academic question that is supposed to cure us all by showing us our feelings and how to just deal with them? Or maybe only used as a backup option when you're caught, not knowing what the fuck you're talking about? I knew my vein had to be bulging from my left side temple. It always swelled first, and then came the splotchy red and white skin. You pay thousands upon thousands of dollars to be schooled in all the most technically advanced therapies, and all your types rebound to, "How does this make you feel?" Well, isn't that freaking phenomenal? Damn. I guess this proves the nuts don't fall too far from the tree, even if they don't share the experience of a devastating war between them. I'm sorry, Doc. It's just that I got job pressures. My dad is dying right in front of me when I make myself go see him. His wife is a manipulative bulldog who lies to me constantly. I love my dad, but she's stolen him from me for years now, and I can't deal with it. I suddenly felt totally overwhelmed and fatigued. And that is how it makes me feel. There you go. I answered the goddamn question. Now, cure me. Steve, I have to say, those opers are not necessarily a bad thing. Under controlled circumstances. Surroundings like here with me in the office, letting off some steam without scaring the hell out of any civilians out there. Doc Charles pointed his finger to the window, where I could see people walking down the sidewalk of downtown Union City. You don't want to scare the masses, especially in this age of times. Doc smiled. I think we're making progress, though. And I hate to ask this, but... He winked at me. How does that statement make you feel? You got me, Doc. But seriously, I feel better. Feels like a few less monsters under the bed today. I won't have to jump as high tonight when I hit the bed. I laughed. I have to admit, the highball glass filled with a double shot of George Dickel, fine Kentucky bourbon, helped nurse me back into a more satisfactory state of mind. Yes, I had made strides towards feeling better about life and myself tonight, but I wasn't instantly cured. There were still rough edges to be honed down, and bourbon did that for me at times. I didn't abuse it. It wasn't like my father and his not water. I relaxed and sipped as I let my head softly fall to the back of my recliner. My eyes quickly felt heavy.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
3. The atmosphere was thick and foggy. The moon shined almost full through the window. I reached out to touch his face. He was hollow and frail. His silver and white hair now matched the color of his mother's, or at least the way I remember her. She lived to be 100. This felt terrible, but as I looked over at my father, I didn't wish the same lifespan for him. Not in the shape he was in, mentally. I imagined the hell it would be like not ever knowing exactly what was going on around me, not fully recognizing the people in my life, or being bullied by a woman who surely thought she was doing the right thing, but obviously was mistaken. I blamed her for my father's memory loss in some ways. She never let him finish a sentence. Ever. I'd ask a question and before he could answer it, she'd be hollering the corrected answer from the other room. Always. The only time my father could speak uninterrupted by her was when he prayed. For dinner, or men's Bible study, or church. She didn't interrupt him then, but the minute he was finished, she was back on bulldog patrol. She was a difficult person to care for. There were many times I felt the pull of my hands to her throat. I had always enjoyed the few times my dad told her to, "Let me finish my damn thought." It was jubilance I felt every damn time it happened, even if seldom and far between.
I hold a bit of self-pride when I look back at my life and think how few grudges with people I still hold. There is one I'm currently guilty for, and that's my dad's second wife. I call her She-Who. She whose name I will never speak. That grudge will never go away. I don't feel the guilt very long when it questions me. She-Who always fills in the blanks with her coy behind-your-back comments, usually right after the caramel sugar-coated compliments she drizzles over you like an endless bottle of sickening sweet syrup. God help her if my father passes first. My dad's eyes begin to haunt me again. He reminds me of the pictures I've seen of Howard Hughes in the days he was living locked up in his high-rise apartment during his crazy hermit days. Hair wild and uncombed, beard growing out in every direction with no attempts of combing it. You'd think his damned loving wife would help him, but she is probably too busy shoving banana cream custard pies down her diabetic throat. I knew my thoughts resonated with ugly overtones. I was making progress, but I'm not perfected yet. She just may be the one stumbling block I may never overcome. My blood boils at the thought of her taking up space residing in my head. I stirred a moment and felt myself turn from one side to the other of my empty bed. I swore I heard something. It was like a faint, eerie cry. I listened again, more closely. Was I still asleep? And was this part of the dream? Or had I actually been awoken to a monster's cry? I lay in silence, straining my ears to block out the city noise of cars and sirens to focus on something closer. It almost felt like a faint, muffled whimpering very near. I heard it again. Was it coming from under the bed? Dare I lean over the edge and peek? At damn near 60 years old, I felt foolish to be nervous at the thought of looking under my own damned bed. The only monster I would find was a stinky old pair of Converse tennis shoes that had been missing since 2014, or, God forbid, an old pair of underwear that went MIA. I began to twist over on my stomach, laying sideways on the lonely king-sized bed, nervously beginning to crane my head over the edge. The old lacy, frilly thing my wife put on our bed so long ago was still hanging over the mattress edge. She left me years ago because of my issues. I'd finally gone to the psychologist, like she asked, Dr. Charles. But she left me anyway. She forgot to take the damn doily quilt with her, though. It was yellowed and as stained as our marriage ended up being. But I couldn't seem to rid myself of the memories it now held. I began to pull it upwards, so I wouldn't have to lean down as much. 4. I'm sure every family throughout the world has some form of dysfunction that lives within the unit somewhere, either close inside, like at the core, or some brother-in-law or distant uncle, somewhere in the family fabric. I know in the interior of our family, some of my step-siblings, even though I've never personally felt like a step or thought of them as one, that their feelings may differ. It's all about perspective. One's prize is another's goose egg. One's happiness or contentment may be the other's hell. But I've always tried to find the positive note, the silver lining wrapped up in the dark storm cloud. No life is perfect. The one I remember as a young child with my birth father, or the man after, that entered my mom's life. It was a new situation we all found each other in. Parents' new romance and marriage. 7 of us thrust into an instant family. 5 children became confused collateral damage from our parents' love. The new man brought himself and 3 new young kids, my new brothers, when I was very happy and settled with just 1 and my mother. I always felt they were the lucky ones to gain older brothers and the best damned mother in the world. I accepted. I shared. My older brother Johnny resented and rebelled. I saw very covertly to myself at many times throughout our entire sharing of a home that we, my mom and brother, were the ones who made any sacrifice, if one was actually to be tallied as made. I later found out while I basically settled into what I saw as a happy family some of my siblings did not see things the same as time passed. Shit, Doc, no one will ever see your notes you're taking, will they? This would be a fucking shocker to my family if they ever found out what was in my head all these years. Steve, your secrets are safe with me. Unless I surmise you were planning someone's demise. I'm a lover, Doc, not a killer. I couldn't even shoot a deer when my stepdad took me hunting. I'm safe, remember? I took that mental test, you know? The one you told me I was so normal that you couldn't believe it. I was actually feeling like Doc Charlie might be helping me. I'm finding out that I am normal. I am the sane one. I just hope I don't follow the way of my dad. I don't want to be lost inside my own mind, unable to claw my way out. My dad's recent line, which he seems stuck on, is, "Lately, I don't know my ass from a hole in the ground." He says it over and over and smiles with a chuckle. I guess in some strange way, he derives pleasure from letting it roll off his tongue. He's not the man I barely knew before the dementia took over. This is who he is now. I suppose I don't really know this man any better than I did the other. And somehow, I love him. I won't ever really know him, but I do love him. It's not just the shared blood thing either. That's never been of importance to me. Family is love and backing one another, helping each other through struggles. Crazy thought, since I really don't remember a single time when my father was actually ever there to do just that. My stepdad was. Multiple times, even though we mixed like oil and water throughout and to this day still. There were many times when I felt like my stepdad suffered from the "he's not from my blood" syndrome. He was still always there for me. I love him too. I love my entire family. I get mad as hell at each of them, but I love them. "You're cured." Doc smiled with the biggest grin I'd ever seen him wear in the 3 years I'd been visiting him after my wife left. I, of course, knew he was being facetious, but it felt good hearing the words. It was like a lead brick being lifted from each shoulder. Instant relief. And I drove home with a new attitude. The world was suddenly mine again. I drove home with a new attitude. I hoped this time the feeling would stick. 5. The phone was ringing before I got the door open. I raced to it, picking it up to a dial tone. The caller ID told me it was my dad's neighbor. I dreaded calling back. Frank never brought good news. I felt my new attitude begin its falter. I hit redial. "Frank," I began to shake my head. "Is he okay? Does he realize what happened to her?" It seems the bulldog was gone. Not like she had cleared out her belongings and left. Her body was still there, on the floor. The odor that filled the room reminded me of the venom she'd been capable of delivering. It hung over me as a bad memory. My dad had apparently tripped over her and fell at some point. He had been lying on the floor beside her for hours. He had hollered my name, and hers, until becoming too hoarse to speak. "I'll be right there, Frank. Thanks for being the good neighbor you've been." I realized instantly in this time of aging that life truly is very short. One should enjoy the happy moments they are allowed to the very fullest. Those are the moments that seem to fill one's entire world when young and unaware of what time is doing to you in the background, wearing you down slowly, pilfering bits and pieces, minute seconds of time and the blur of all the magnificence happening in the foreground. Now, watching someone else who already enjoyed their time on this world, reaping the nanoseconds of richness and memory-making, begin the process of regressing back to the child we all came from, knowing nothing but what we see in front of us. No benefit of realizing the consequences of what the seasons of life led to, watching life fade away, but not knowing what to do even if we realize the revolution we were made to endure. We all become ghosts of our past, born to haunt us with memories of the best of times, dangling them in front of us to taunt what we once held and took for granted. Those reflections of our past joy become the poisons that cause our pain as we see the fading of our loved ones. Our stories come to a close, leisurely at first, and then like a speeding train, rushing head-on with its bright light shining with the fury of an attacking mountain lion with no fear, no relent. My mind wouldn't let these thoughts escape as I made my way over to the house that had been lost to them both recently. Taxes, insurance, utilities, nothing had been paid. His wife just decided one day she needn't take care of those things anymore. My dad, unaware of the life nearly stolen from him by negligence. The bulldog never told him, never told me. I had to hear it from the neighbor she called her enemy now. Now that she had been exposed, the loving neighbor that told me just in the nick of time so I could find a way to pay the 3 years of back taxes before the house was taken with all its contents, them thrown to the street. And now as I wrestle with all of this, knowing my father is helpless in the realization his world is very different suddenly, not even knowing why his wife is lying motionless on the floor, not understanding why he had been made to lie beside her for God knows how many hours, wondering what he was supposed to do. All I could think and filter out of this mess of bullshit rushing around my mind was the domineering, all self-knowing bitch was gone. I couldn't find any sorrow or even satisfaction in the fact. Life was now changed, not only for my dad, but for me. Where would he go? What would I do? I'd never taken care of anyone in the shape he was in. I didn't know what channels to go through all the bureaucracy to get assistance for someone left penniless in this world. The taxes I paid had emptied a good portion of my retirement, the economical collapse having taken most of it to begin with. I suddenly saw the foreshadow of my future. His mirrored mine in some ways. The thought scared me back to the current situation. The house couldn't be sold while the bitch was alive because my father's name was on the title and he wasn't mentally capable of signing if it sold. My name was taken off by the bulldog years before because she got mad at me. I was fucked right alongside my dad. My future every bit as devastated. I'd never be able to retire, and now all I could think of as I pulled into the drive, flashing lights of police and medical care, was he would need to come home with me. At least until I could sort things out. Life exploded in what now felt like a nanosecond, the truth being that this train wreck had been set on its course of destructive mayhem months, if not years, earlier. It was either kept from me, or I chose to ignore it. The blame held no value now. Life would be very different. My ghosts from the past now surrounded me. A man I had feared, a man whom I felt deserted me and our family, only to disappear into several other people's lives throughout his life, was now sitting in my passenger seat with a blank empty stare and the silence of a planet millions of light years away. He would be dependent on me for everything in his life now, as scared as this thought was to me. I couldn't imagine what it was to him. I glanced over, trying to smile with an assuring and pleasant loving facade across my face. In reality, the draw to push the pedal to the floor and then steer into a telephone pole, making both of our lives end without suffering through the rest, took all the self-control I could muster. 6. The whimper grew louder as I lay in bed. The sheets now lay twisted in a ball beside me, my eyes wearily trying to focus on the darkness under the bed. Everything in my recent past was being relived most every night in the form of dreams and nightmares. I never knew when I woke up if life was real in the moment or in the terror of dream world. What did I do so terrible in life, back in my youth-filled magic times, to deserve the outcome I was now living? Was God angry and punishing me? Why, at my ripe old age now, were the monsters under the bed coming back to terrify me? I was supposed to be on my way to retirement and looking forward to my golden years. But here I was, working my ass off during the day, a small apartment I now shared with a man I barely knew who had been under the thumb of his fourth wife for the last 30 years. She had robbed him of his mental capacity and didn't even have the decency, even though she was several years younger, to stay and finish her goddamn job of taking care of the man she stole from me all those years ago. She should be here, not me. I'm laying in a bed alone because my ex-wife was smart enough to read the writing on the wall. I'm hearing noises and feeling Fuck, I don't know what I'm feeling. Self-pity? Guilt? Anger? Nah, it's fear right now. I don't know where my life is going. My doctor told me I was cured. Bullshit. What the hell did he know? How does that make you feel? I know how the hell I feel, Doc. I feel betrayed by life. My good moments haven't stacked up against the shit dealt to me. I wonder if God was even listening. Was this entertainment for him? Like when I turned the channel over to reruns of Cheers to help knock the edge off my day? I suddenly just felt anger beyond belief run through me. What the fuck? If it's a monster under this damned... I hope it rips my head off the moment I see it. You hear me, monster? This is my home. This is my bed. My fucking rules. Show me your face and rip mine off. With that, I plunged my head down quickly below the yellowed lace, which still remained attached to the blanket I'd never been able to remove. Every time I'd tried, I'd stopped. Most all of the pleasant memories I still retained were made either on top of it or underneath it with the woman who now shared another man's bed. I had nothing to care enough to live for anymore. A monster wasn't going to scare me. Hell, I relished the thought of it taking me from this eternity of dilemma. Hanging upside down now from the edge of my bed, I slowly opened my eyes when I'd realized the monster hadn't removed my head as I had challenged. There in the furthest corner of the darkest darkness I had ever seen, I saw them. At first, I held no idea who they belonged to. They had to be the devils. But then I realized they didn't hold any violence or cruel hatred within them. The eyes that stared back into mine didn't blink or so much as flicker with movement. No, these eyes held something very different, otherworldly. The two barely visible white circles surrounding a strange pair of reddish-brown irises encircling their black pupils were filled with nothing but question and mystery, with doubt. But all of a sudden, they became warm in appearance, heated with a feeling of overwhelm, as if something magical just cut through the darkness. That's when I knew who owned those hard-to-read optical orbs. The pressure valve inside my brain gave a little relief inside as my eyes connected with those begging to see the same relief in mine. They belonged to my father. This was his safe zone, I remembered. He had carried the look of fear, a fear so deep I'd never seen. He had worn the look of a young man who witnessed killing of men who looked scary to American soldiers such as he, who were dropped into their jungles, taken like others from school and girlfriends, best friends and family, dropped into the middle of a quagmire not caused by the young men sent to settle by force. I think something hit him when he looked back into the same eyes filled with emotion. Something clicked, because that scared and petrified gaze from the darkness became beams of hope that he would be saved. My heart warmed and I didn't know why. Tears gushed from eyes as I dropped down onto the floor with a thud and began to belly crawl towards him. His legs and arms tucked in the fetal position, I moved slowly. "Dad, it's me, Steve. You remember me, don't you? I'm your son." I watched the familiar smile grow across the man's face I never really knew other than the fact he was my father. The familiar gap in his front two teeth showed from the widened smile and became the evidence for me to know who he was. In this instant, my dad was now a man who needed me for the first time in his life. I held a choice. I could be the man who turned his back like the many times I felt that way about what he had done. Or I could be his savior. I could crawl deeper under the bed and hold him in comfort. The comfort I knew he longed for. I've been a believer of faith my entire life. My dad was at one time, early in his life, a Methodist preacher. He left the ministry for the larger portion of his life. He left me for most of his life too. At least that's the way it felt. But he came back into ministry after he retired from secular work to become a local pastor in three churches not far from where I and my wife and family live. He became a little closer to me, and we shared some quality times together, sailing on his yacht on the lake or sharing a men's Bible study together. Sometimes just short, mostly pointless conversations. But this time shared together didn't last very long, a mere drop in the bucket of our lives. times we were removed from each other crept in at several points. Maybe because I'm more like him than I want to think. Maybe the bulldog was at fault. It didn't matter now. I can't answer those questions, but I know one thing. In the moment we shared within the darkness under the bed was the closest I had ever felt to him. I was his assurance everything would be all right. He wasn't alone in this new trial. He was now like the son who needed his dad to make things feel right. We laid under the bed, arm in arm, for several hours before I could convince him to crawl out and into the light once again, to face the challenges set before us. We'd tackle them together. I'm 78 now. I've had some difficult times, but I've enjoyed great ones too. My father has been gone now for almost 17 years. At times, it's felt fast. Yet at other times, it feels like quicksand holding me at a deathly slow pace. Doc Charlie once again helped me out after I lost my dad. I guess he ended up knowing more than that one stupid question every shrink always pops off. How does that make you feel? Well, now that my time is more than likely my latter days, I find myself crawling under the bed at night when I'm feeling lost and lonely. It's now become my source of comfort like it was my father's. I now realize that in most circumstances, the monsters rarely live under the bed. It's just the noises from memories past that rattle in the dark and haunt us from circumstance or choices we sometimes land in. Embrace them and meet them head on. That's when instead of scary creatures or devils, you'll find comfort in the dark shadows under the bed. I know I do. 5 years to the day, Steve's son Jake found his father passed away in the apartment he had lived since his divorce. Jake and his mother entered the apartment with the police to do a well check after failing to get phone calls returned or answers from knocking on the door. They were about to give up and mark him as a silver alert before Jake peeked underneath the lacy bedspread and into the darkness below. He was curled up in the fetal position, but held a smile frozen across his cold blue lips. I hope you enjoyed tonight's tales, Garden of Statues and Under the Bed, written by Eli Pope. Eli Pope is a major writing contributor for Fear from the Heartland. Eli began his love of creating stories back in high school creative writing classes. The passion laid dormant for decades while life took him different directions. The stories never left, and he finally succumbed to the voices in his head telling him to put them on paper. And put them on paper he did, earning the Literary Titan Award for The Judgment Game and The Spark of Wrath, books 1 and 2 of the Mason Jar series, which you, dear listener, can hear on audible.com, performed by yours truly, Paul J. McSorley. The only thing I will tell you, Billy J. Cater is a bad dude. You can hook up with Eli Pope at his website, elipope.com. That's Eli, E-L-I, Pope, P-O-P-E.com. He can also be located on Facebook at author Eli Pope, or search groups on Facebook, The Mason Jar Room. If you enjoyed tonight's story, hosted by yours truly, Paul J. McSorley, you can search my name on Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on YouTube for additional previous stories. If you'd like to hear more lengthy tales, be sure to take a look at my audiobooks. Available now on audible.com or just visit paulsbooks.net. That's paulsbooks.net. You can also find me personally on Facebook and Twitter. And with that, listeners, our weekly journey into the psyche has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight's episode.
and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And while you're at it, please remember to stop by our Apple Podcast page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and subscribe. The charts are based on subscriptions, not listens. So if you haven't subscribed yet, I'd really appreciate it. I'm your host for Fear from the Heartland, Paul J. McSorley. I've enjoyed the titillation tonight. Ooh, there's that word again. Thank you for joining me. Hope to see you again next week at Fear from the Heartland.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.